So how's life in France, though, Axel? Can we still talk about the rugby at this stage, or do we need to
I don't know.
very quick
No,
very
life is
passionate
okay.
about it,
Yeah.
as well as
Life.
passionate about AI and everything sales.
Yeah, absolutely. AI is and remains a very big, fast trend
Yes.
that goes beyond everything we know and everything we can think about. So it's tough to contemplate the
Yes.
magnitude of change.
And then, well, why don't we make a start? And I think this is going to be recorded. George, I'm just checking it. It'll be recorded. So I think
Yes,
we
that's
should
right.
take
It's
the chance
recording.
as those who are with us have kindly participated on the hour. So I think we should make a start. So I wonder if I could just say a few words just to get us going. And then I think first of all, I'd just like to say a huge welcome to Axel Frerol, who is someone who's very well known to Consalia and who has joined us from time to time on our podcast series, as well as maybe this is the first time we have you on the Ask Me Anything series, Axel. Is that correct? So,
Absolutely correct, Phil.
yeah. So what's different about AMA to the podcast channel is of course, we have guests who are listening in live, and they have a chance of asking questions as we go through the interviews. But so just a few words, perhaps Axel, you could say a few words about yourself before we get going, just by means of introduction.
Oh yeah, happy to do so. Hi Phil, hi everyone. So Axel Frerol, I'm part of SAP in the Global Learning Team. I spent the last 18 years at SAP investigating sales from a process standpoint, from of course a sales standpoint, from a learning and enablement standpoint, and over the last 4 years from an innovation and transformation standpoint. Through that role, I started looking into AI. How can we use AI to help ourselves be more efficient, and what can we contemplate as being the future of sales with AI? But again, as mentioned a bit earlier on, that is ongoing as we speak, right? So it's a wild field of exploration. So I will try to give you my best answers as of today's knowledge, knowing that the future is full of potential.
Axel, I know that this is a massive topic for SAP, and before we sort of get into some kind of specific questions, it would be really un interesting to understand the journey that SAP as a company has been going on with this respect, because it's a new phenomenon. I think organizations are trying to work out how they should use AI. I'm sure that being the sort of company that SAP is, the ethical frameworks for managing the AI journey is going to be hugely important as well. So is there a chance you could just give us some of the context of what's driven or what is driving some of the thinking at SAP at the moment when it comes to AI? Maybe not just for sales, but just broadly, because we know this is a massive wave sort of hitting us all at the moment. So, yeah.
It is Phil. And the thing is that with AI, what is weird is that AI is not new, right? I mean, it started in the 1960s, and then it went for 20 years of sleeping because we didn't have the technology to make it become something tangible. It was just into the research lab of some gurus. And while technology has been developing, especially through machine learning and deep learning, we started seeing AI develop. And then out of a sudden, we see generative AI with ChatGPT coming on board. And then, boom, out of a sudden, it becomes a revolution. Now, SAP has been looking at machine learning for a long, long time. I mean, what we have at SAP, because we are driving the processes into the organizations, what we have is access to data. You cannot do machine learning without data. You need huge amount of data. And SAP has been looking at the best way to use that data to give intelligent insights to users and to professionals. So we have been looking into that for a long, long time. But now we have the technology which enable us to make a huge difference into what we call embedded AI, meaning that the AI brings insights in your day-to-day activities and has a context, a professional context associated with it. It's now out of context. It has real insight within the area of sales in that case, because that's what matters to us. And we are looking into this now much more precisely by area of professional interest. And that's what we can do thanks to the latest technology. But again, we have been looking to that for past years, talking about machine learning, not about AI in that respect, or generative AI. And what we see also coming now is ethics. We have an ethics group at SAP. I've been working with them recently as we were trying to train 5,000 salespeople using AI. And we realized that, yes, ethics is a very, very big topic, something I would like to address, because it went much beyond what I was expecting, to be honest.
Yeah, just sounds such a massive thing. And you used the phrase earlier on, Axel, the sort of revolution suddenly. We suddenly found ourselves to be in this sort of, since ChatGPT was launched, this sort of revolution. Mm-hmm. But what is it, when you say that AI has been around for a long time, what is it that's happened specifically to make it a revolution? Why a revolution now, if it's been around for some time?
I guess if you were someone coming from engineering and from, you know, computer science, you wouldn't be surprised by AI. You would have followed through a very technology-centric trend, and you would say that's not new. For me, being more of a business person, for you, Phil, and for, I believe, people here on the panel listening, I guess we are more from a business perspective. And again, it was hidden from us because it was a very technology-centric trend. Now, with generative AI, out of a sudden, we are able to use it using natural language, right? It's a language model. And out of a sudden, you have the full power computing system of that massive intelligence, having access to huge amount of data and to internet directly now, and that you can just question or ask directly using natural language. This has made that technology usable for you, and that starts opening up, you know, quite unlimited improvement and innovation from a business perspective, because you can simply type what you want. And for us at SAP, having access to data, analytics is the first thing we look at. So you're in sales, you type a question saying, okay, show me the latest results in my geography for this type of products, enter, and here we go. You don't have to go through a dashboard, you don't have to go through a multiple Excel, you just type it in, and the engine in the back end just do what it has, and it comes back with the results for you. And it even comes with predictive recommendation for you to look at the dimensions and the report from a different perspective, just by typing, give me and show me those data. And this is massive, let's say, freedom and unlock of the potential of data, if you have the right data, obviously.
So you're suggesting that what this enables you to do is not rely so much on the, you know, standard management dashboards for analyzing sales information, or do you see a kind of role for that still existing, topped up by the kind of intelligence that you've got or questions that you want to ask of your data, which then would be fueled by the generative AI process?
Put it that way, the machine learning aspect of AI is experts in pattern recognition. So its job is to find patterns for you, okay? So if you're in sales and you're engaging on a sales motion and something happens and you can track the activities, you put the activity in CRM through activity-based management, out of a sudden your AI start tracking patterns of the behavior of the customer, and out of a sudden can send you a warning saying, well, it's based on the latest time in between response from the customer, based on the information given, the way it has been written, we can tell you that you have 92% chance of that deal to be stopped. Because through benchmarking of data across the world on those type of deals, benchmarking the various, you know, regions and the various industries, the system will actually identify a pattern and tell you and send you an alarm saying, be careful, the way the customer reacts might mean that they are ready to drop off, right? So you might then think about a way to recover the situation or investigate in the information. And that's what machine learning is so good at doing, recognizing patterns within complex data and unstructured data.
And so when you started to go about the way that you are looking at using AI inside the organization, where do you start? I mean, did you start at sort of what might be of use to managers or salespeople or geographies or regions? You know, for a company that's got as many salespeople as SAP does, where do you start the process?
So the first thing at the moment, SAP has launched Joule. And Joule, we can call that an AI copilot. Okay, so copilot is a tactical name used in the IT industry, and lots of our partners and competitors use the same terminology. The idea here, which I think is the first level of complexity, is to get an assistant to whom you can talk using natural language in order to have access to data. Okay, so as said, again, the first thing for a manager will be to contemplate and ask questions around, you know, the forecasting, the pipeline, the current situation of the business. So all that is something you can now have access to through SAP, in SAP, through Joule as an easy assistant and interface. That's level one. Okay. Now, level two beyond that will be to start embedding AI in any core processes in sales. And that takes time. We work on that, but of course, it's under development and the roadmap starts and continues. SAP has announced billions of investments in AI. And of course, we will start embedding this AI in any sub-processes of our sales motion. Okay. So for us as sales, demand generation is one. Forecasting and predictive analytics is one. Opportunity scoring and opportunity analysis is something important. You can even go into some negotiation aspects, which is important. There are lots and lots of area which for us is important. From an account perspective, understanding the dynamics, what's happening within an account, you know, from sentiment analysis to account scanning, latest news, all that being consolidated and given to you into a very digestible data set is also something we are contemplating. So the usage is massive. Of course, behind that, you need to code the AI and you need to feed the AI with data. Because without data, without feeding, you don't get context. And without context, you don't get reliable data out. Mm. So there is lots to be done before you come to the perfect analysis from the AI.
And okay, so this is really interesting. So it's, you know, the SAP, you've got massive amount of data, which potentially could be fed into an AI generative engine, if you like, that can enable salespeople and sales managers to get access to data in a very different way, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. From where you're sitting at the moment, Axel, where do you see the big benefits to be had, and where do you see some of the risks to be had as well from the initiative that you're currently looking at?
At the moment, I need to talk about dreams versus reality, right? When I went through this enablement, the idea of the enablement was, okay, the business came to us saying, listen, we have so many solutions. We want our salespeople to be able to articulate the right pitch in front of the customer for those solutions. Now, we want them to be able to train using an AI system because engaging with experts all the time, you know, for 5 to 10,000 AEs across the world, cost a fortune and use your experts and get them out of the sales motion and the interaction with our customers. So we said, let's try to do it with AI. When we started doing this, we started looking at what is the reality of AI today. There are things you can do and there are things you cannot do at the moment. The first thing that I learned, which is important, is an AI through machine learning needs to be fed with thousands of data, and you need to tell the system whether that data is good or if that data is bad. If was that a good move or a bad move during the sales engagement, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't tell that to the AI, you know, cannot just know that that was good or bad. So you need to start educating, feeding the AI with intelligent information, okay? Which means that you cannot just come and say, okay, I want to have those data out of the blue available. I mean, on statistics, yes, because you have data learning looking at statistic patterns, right? But when it comes to qualitative information on what is a good sales engagement or not a good sales engagement, you need to tell them what is good and what is bad. That was the first learning for me. I thought that the AI was highly intelligent very quickly. Well, yes and no. The no is that they need really lots and lots of data to understand what is good, what is not good, so that they can start fine-tuning the response towards you to tell you in a predictive way whether that is a good signal or a bad signal. And we need to be aware of that. So when you think about a salesperson, looking into the future, what I see coming is that at some point, imagine that you have an assistant. This is an AI assistant. You can even imagine even having an avatar now coming. The technology here. So you have an avatar, you talk to the AI, so you can talk, right? So it's coming, yeah. ChatGPT has that, so technology of talking now is there. So imagine in a year from now, you get your sales assistant or solution assistant, yeah, with all the data on the solution you want to sell, and you're the salesperson, and you start talking to your AI. And at the end or during a sales cycle, you start telling the AI what was good and what was not good. So for this type of deal, which is a RISE deal for us at SAP on strategic engagement, that's what we've done. This was good. This was not good. This we could have done differently. You start feeding the AI as a post-mortem after the deal, telling them what was good, what was not. And all salespeople start feeding the AI with information. By doing that, you start creating a huge amount of data set that you can then start using for predictive. And that's what I believe is step one. You need to create that sales assistant, and that sales assistant will ask you questions. And in a conversational manner, within a year, let's say 12 to 18 months, you should be able to tell him what's good, what's not. And at a global level, gets all the data collected. That's for me step.
Amazing. So that's requiring the sales force then to feed information, you know, into, mm-hmm. you know, the data set. Is that something specific, like after each conversation I have with a client or after each deal that was won or lost? Are there very specific moments where you want to capture this kind of information that's fed into the AI database?
I'm a big fan of post-mortem, usually after deals, but that's something where we're going to have to change also the mindset of our salespeople, because what I'm telling you here is projection of what will be. We are not at that level, okay? But what I think is that the value of a salesperson at the moment, to a certain extent, is the information he keeps or she keeps on the account, right? So salesperson have not always been the most transparent people. When you talk about AI, transparency becomes key. You need to share data. You need to inform the system with insight. And only then can the AI become extremely powerful. So we will have to become transparent, sharing salespeople if we want the AI to become extremely smart and to help us.
Do you think that's possible?
No, I believe so. I mean, you know, we need to adapt to the AI, right? First, the AI will help you on automating simple tasks, right? That's what you see today. Today, what can we do? You can create automated emails, and you can, for instance, from a demand gen perspective, have a suite of emails pre-generated, adapted by your roles to, if you talk to a CFO, is different from a CIO, and so on and so forth. That can be fine-tuned. We are getting there, but within 6 to 8 months, that will be okay. The problem will be to create a specific context for your organization. The problem currently with AI is that data are owned by the generative AI technology. So you need to create a legal framework where your data set remains your own data. So SAP is currently creating that legal framework for their customers and for us, where the data remains our data. That's important. The second one is when you have that, you don't want your data to leak into the public domain. So it needs to be extremely secured environment so that the data remains private, highly private. You know? Otherwise, you lose the trust and you cannot lose the trust in that business. So the second one is security. Once you have a legal framework where you own the data and a very secured environment, then the AI kicks in. That's where then the AI has its what we call context. All this information from SAP or customers of SAP gets into that and starts creating a huge intelligent set of data where the AI can start drawing, you know, correlations. And then at the moment, we can already, through generative AI, create emails. But the problem is not to create an email. You want to create an email that is contextualized for exactly what you want to do. If you're in UK and you're into retail and you talk to a CFO, you want to have an email that is generated for a retail person in a CFO role in the UK, which is not what is going in France, not what is on the west coast of the US. So the contextualization becomes important. And that's where we make the difference between intelligent value AI versus data creation, where you say, okay, I create an email. That's a function, right? But if it's not contextualized, the value for the customer and for the salesperson is extremely limited. Yeah, okay, you have an email, fine, but it doesn't give you context and you cannot really use it. So if you create and auto-generate an email, but then you need to spend as much time to modify your email because you need to make it now more retail UK CFO based, what's the point? Yeah, you will have to redo the email anyway. So that's not value.
So we're having a very interesting conversation, Axel, and I know we've got some people on the call on the webinar, and I just want to take this small moment to ask those of you listening in to Axel, really. I'm simply his, a prompt for Axel to ask any questions you might have. I mean, it's such a big topic, this, and it would be interesting to know, sort of any concerns you've got, any bits of advice you might be looking up for from Axel's perspective. I mean, he is working with one of the companies with one of the largest sales organizations in the world. So I think that, the fact they're in the data area means that they're probably right at the heart of an enormous amount of innovation going on. So please feel free to in chat, or we may invite you to unmute yourselves if I can enlist George's help on that. Please ask questions as we go through. I don't want you just to think it's between myself and Axel. So please feel free to do so. So probably chat's not a bad place to start. So the chat function should be seen on your Zoom screen. So any questions you feel you'd like to ask, please put them in chat, and then we'll see if we can proceed on them. Axel, I know that we've had a number of master's students, or we had one master student, Sir Lenny, who is on our GST event, who is dialing in from Canada, talking about AI and ethical frameworks, and he had made that his final dissertation topic, and it prompted a huge amount of interesting thinking about the sort of governance frameworks that are needed. And I think you've just highlighted as well. Well, actually, I see Paul Davidson's asking a question about legal frameworks. You mentioned legal. How do you see the legislative landscape impacting the use of AI in the context you've been discussing? That's a really, really good question from Paul. Axel, how is SAP doing it? Because I know that, you are an incredibly ethical company. I know this must be looked at by your lawyers at depth. So how are you being influenced from a legal perspective about what you can and cannot do?
I guess, okay, I can only provide a partial answer to that because I'm not part of that group. But what I can say is that first we have created the ethics group. The ethics group is based, is composed of experts from a technology and from a legal perspective. And from a diversity perspective, because there are lots of biases in AI based on the way the AI has been coded. Okay. And you need to make sure that those biases do not pervert the results that you get. So we have that group. And what is very important is that we are inviting to that group external consultants who have huge expertise. And we have people in Germany who are coming from a more regulatory background around AI and from a legislative perspective, who start consulting us on that. And for each project that we do, we need to go through the ethics validation, right? So the project I had to train sales using AI, so on the sales pitch, right? We had to go through three interview with the ethics group where we exposed how the program was designed, what we wanted to do. And they started asking us questions on everything. So they ask us, okay, number one, how are you going to make sure that the data that are provided by the AI in order to train the salesperson is fair? Okay, so you want to have a fair treatment by the AI, and you as a learner needs to agree to be assessed and measured by a machine. So would you agree? If you're not agreeing, then don't do it. So you should have a level of transparency, reliability, and accuracy that is so high that it would be coming very close to a human assessment. And they challenge us a lot on that thing. So I can't totally tell you about the legislative aspect because it goes much beyond my pay grade. What I know is when we look and we go through the ethics group, they are challenging us on that. They start from a bias perspective, from a gender and inclusivity and diversity perspective, and then they go into the data quality, transparency, and accuracy. Those metrics, when you look at it from a project perspective, forces you to go extremely deep in your thinking because you need to do things that you would not expect. For instance, you get a salesperson to do a pitch and you ask the generative AI to assess it. It will tell you, Phil, you did a great job, you get 92 points, so you pass. Funnily enough, if you replay the exact same pitch, you will get a result of 69 on the exact same pitch. Why? Because generative AI is generative. It cannot replicate the same. It generates the new. So it will take what you said, will look at different criteria, even though you told him as much as you can within that context, please check those elements. It will start modify the ranking and give you a different result. And when what we've done, we have created 10 times, we have used 10 times the same video, we gave it to the same, exactly the same AI, we got 10 times different results. And you're like, this cannot be, the ethics will never accept that. So we had to work with the experts trying to see how we can fine-tune, calibrate the AI so that if I give you 10 times the same pitch, you should get at least a variation of plus or minus 2%, but you cannot get plus 20% deviation. So this type of limitation into the generation coding of an AI creates huge problems. Because imagine that you do, you send a request. So, okay, show me the numbers. Okay, show me my results in finance on this, on sales and whatever. And they give you one number. And then you ask exactly the same thing. You press enter and you get a different number. This can't work, right? So you need to reduce the generative, and by the way, you can do it tactically and technically. You can reduce the generative aspect of an AI to say, don't generate, just give me the right feedback, okay? So anyway, that's how the ethics group coaches us through the understanding of the deep meaning and coding and biases of an AI. But that's not the legal, I understand. It's not the legal, it's more the ethics group. The legal aspect, well, I don't know what I don't know. It's like there are so many things we're going to discover by starting using AI. At the moment, really, is who owns the data. That's crucial. If every time you go through a generative AI module, the data ownership becomes the property of that generative AI system, then you lose your data. This cannot be, right? So that's really the big, big topic at the moment. It's how do you keep the property of your data?
It's very interesting that Paul, in respect to your question, Lenny Montero, and you could follow him on one of our GST podcasts. I think, George, you might be able to dig the one out that might be relevant to this and maybe put it in chat. I had looked at the governance that was being looked at across different geographies, and things like attitudes to face recognition in China is very different to how it might be in Europe or in America. So you're seeing these sort of regional differences on what they feel to be important in terms of governance. I think it's only the Europe now that has actually started to put together the legal frameworks for AI. And I haven't studied that document yet. I don't know if anyone on this call has done that, but if you have, then it would be interesting just to share it with us. But I mean, clearly the I mean all the topics you've spoken about, the bias of the way in which we can look at data, the importance to take into account diversity, the ability to be able to train an AI engine to give you correct answers. I mean, it's just to know that that's possible is really interesting. Paul, thank you for your question. We've got another question that was posed by one of ours here, Axel, which is from George. Will our AI bring sales and marketing closer together, do you think, by streamlining account-based marketing kind of activities? I mean, what's the there's always been this slight, a silo, marketing, thinking they've hit all their KPIs on sales qualified leads or market qualified leads and sales, saying no, that's the quality is not so good. But are you sensing that this is going to drive a lot more collaboration between different departments, or you've not had chance to see that so far?
So, have I seen a real impact now, as of today, between the departments? No, because we talk about different function. The fact that the data will converge, that's no doubt. We are converging data, and we will be able to do sentiment analysis and account, white space analysis, all that combined into a clever analytics through the system. But that will be done by the AI, right? It will be available for the marketing, will be available for sales. And clearly, we're going to have, and we will be able to look at it from multiple perspectives. Now, will that change from an organizational perspective the way we operate as marketing and sales? I don't think so. That's an organizational decision to be done by the corporation. But I think what is more interesting is the definition of marketing versus sales. At the moment, what we see at SAP is the big shift between the on-prem and the cloud world, and the pre-sales and the post-sales, and what sales actually means, right? Because the new cloud dynamics changes everything, where adoption and consumption become so important. And for us, therefore, there is a shift in terms of the center of gravity of who owns what in the account, and how do we bring most value to our customers, and how can we simplify to actually deliver value and realize the value. Because value realization becomes key. And we see that there is a new definition of what sales means within that new cloud environment. So for SAP at the moment, the question is more to make sure that we are delivering the right value to the customer by redefining the roles and redefining the way we engage with customers, rather than looking difference between sales and marketing, and looking at how the AI can help doing that. Because we need to start bringing more value. Value for the customer is key. Value realization is the ultimate goal. And that's what we want to ensure. So a technology that doesn't bring value, doesn't help improving the customer value realization, has no value to us. And that's what we try to do, is to make it an embedded AI so that it will support all the sales activities down to the post-sales, of course. And we will try to make value improve at each point of interaction with the customer. And that's what we are trying to reflect on at the moment.
Yeah, interesting. I'm going to sort of reach out to a number of people who've joined us on the webinar, whose names I recognize. And there's a name that has joined us that goes back a number of years, Howard Cosby. Hello, Howard. How are you? I don't know if you can unmute yourself or whether George can unmute you, but I hope you don't mind me focusing on you, Howard, first of all, to say hello. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Phil. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You're coming through really well. Howard,
Excellent.
I had to single you out, first of all, to say hello. It's been a long time.
Indeed.
Secondly, clearly you joined this because the topic is of interest to you. And I just wondered whether there was any particular aspect of AI that you were interested in perhaps learning more about.
I think really my main question to Alex is probably around where he thinks we are on the curve, and by that I suppose I mean SAP, where we are on the curve in terms of the progress towards reliable AI analytics across the revenue and customer cycle compared to where people are on the purchasing procurement cycle? Are we quite a long way behind in terms of the activities on the revenues side?
Actually, that's a really interesting question, because Howard, are you still involved on the procurement side of?
Yeah, and also on the revenue side as well. I mean, it's actually something in the order of about 50-50 now.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So
yeah,
Axel, Howard has been a real expert in the whole procurement process and the way that you analyze data in order to look at sort of procurement contractual agreements and all sorts of interesting stuff. But Howard is also, I know, on the sales side, because he's been the global account managers and directors for such companies focusing in that area. I'm sure, Howard, your life has moved on since then a bit. But yes, do you get any sense that procurement might be ahead of the curve? What sort of questions would they be asking of, well, I suppose there's a lot of analytics around, you know, the supply side.
Yeah, because Howard, I don't have, honestly, I don't have answers on this one, because it's very specific, and I don't think that's something that we have started looking at least from that perspective. At the moment, the way we look at it is we are trying to identify the best use cases for the customer engagement, together with our customers, by the way, the customer engagement, the customer experience. And we try to see where does it make sense to embed AI, because we can develop AI use cases. But as I said, first, you need to go through the ethics, you need to validate it. There is a cost associated with that, right? There is an effort.
Yes.
So you're not doing it unless this is something that the customer wants. Now, we are not at, at least I haven't seen yet, a use case surfacing, getting procurement into the game. I know we can do, at least from a sales perspective, right? From an other industry perspective, where procurement has specific elements, probably yes, but that's in the huge roadmap of SAP somewhere in one of the industry hidden that I haven't seen, because I looked for the preparation more from a sales perspective. And I guess we are looking at it more from a customer interactivity and pattern recognition and, you know, opportunity scoring. I guess that's where we are. Now, from my point of view, though, what I'm interested more is the legal aspect of simplifying the approach for the customer, but for us as well, through the sales cycle, because our legal framework sometimes are complex. And my dream still remains to create within the next 18 to 24 months a sales assistant that can answer any legal questions, any contractual questions for my salespeople on any type of solutions that we own. That would be massive in terms of gain for our sales guys, because SAP is complex. Of course, we have a complex portfolio. The environment is complex. Legislations are complex. So if you can have an intelligent AI who can help you be your assistant on that, that would be already amazing. Now, coming to exactly procurement, at least I have no data for that for now.
Yeah. Okay.
Howard, we may not have answered your question, but... It's an interesting one, because I know that you've got Ariba, you know, as a big sort of procurement portal, I think, for SAP. I'm sure that they're going to have AI initiatives that they'll be looking at, you know, as part of the AI push that SAP is going towards. So
Phil. I'm sure that someone at SAP would jump if they would hear that statement from me. Say, of course, we have something. The problem at SAP is just to try to know everything we have. I mean, it's just like
I recognize that, Alex. I mean, I do understand it's probably a slightly unfair question. But of course, at the end of the day, what we would be trying to achieve in terms of being sales professionals is to, of course, to make it easier for the procurement personnel to choose in the way that we want them to choose. And it's you know, the it's just a different way of looking at it, isn't it? When one considers that the process inevitably involves procurement personnel, and therefore, at the end of the day, everything that we're trying to do in the sales process has to be geared towards making it as easy as it possibly can be for the procurement personnel to say yes.
To the extent, Howard, that I was thinking preparation for this call, what will become the sales of the future? I mean, if I have this sales assistant that is so clever, that has an avatar interface that speaks all languages, that has access to all the engagement across SAP globally, that actually has all the pricing strategies, all the transparency on you know, pricing tables, rights, and SAP is complex usually on this, and we try to simplify with the cloud approach. But the fact is, what's the point then? What's the role of sales? Because for those very specific questions, go to the AI. I mean, we'll give you the answer, obviously. Okay. So I was wondering then, what is a salesperson going to become if the more transactional answers can be answered by the AI, right? And I guess that's where you see that the salespeople would become much more strategic. They would have to understand the business better. They would have more time, and that's a good thing. They would have more time to finally talk to the customer, take care of their business, understand their business, their specificities, because the rest can be done by the AI. Okay, the AI can actually compute transactional data. And I guess that's where finally we could be fully customer centric. And what
that
I hope
is that is the nirvana, isn't it?
That's the nirvana, obviously, yes. But I do hope that the AI, in terms of real impact for SAP and for any companies, is because we get rid of every transactional, low perceived value type activities from our day-to-day routine, we can finally focus on more strategic, high value, you know, social impact, environmental impact, you know, the real conversation, revenue generating type activities. And I guess that's where we should focus.
When we can become super beings.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, Howard, thank you very much for your line of questioning.
Pleasure.
That's brilliant. I think if you don't mind, I'll direct some questions to some of the others on the call as well. I know that we did have Kathy on the call, but I think she's just...
Bill, there's a question in the Q&A section can you see that now?
In the Q&A from Will, I can see.
No, from Alexandra in the specific Q&A section rather than the chat. I can always copy and paste it if you can't see it.
Sorry, I can't see it for some reason.
A Gen AI generic tool that exists currently that can plug into a CRM to start the AI training, or is it still a resource that remains for the largest companies to create their own tech to apply to their business? I mean, what I can tell on this one, even though I'm not the expert on the technology side, we are collaborating, right? We are collaborating with Microsoft, with IBM, we collaborate with many companies in the AI. The SAP, I don't think, has a willingness to develop AI-specific, you know, Gen AI type engine, right? It's not what we want to do. We are collaborating and we put our intelligence on how to embed that into the process, right? So the data and the business process is where we have our knowledge and we put the AI to serve that. So we're gonna use the best technology to do so. So on this one, that's what we do. So in terms of plugin, there might be plugins which I'm not aware of. And from what I see, AI requires lots of fine tuning, right? So any plugin we have requires lots of fine tuning anyway. But if you want to know more about that, by the way, we have on learning.sap.com a specific course on AI. The first four modules, if I'm not mistaken, are generic in nature. The fifth one talks about Joule, which is our AI assistant. But the we start, you know, training, which is also an important point for our salespeople to be more literate about AI, but also for everyone at SAP and in our community. To know more about the AI. So we are building now AI curriculum as well so that everyone can learn.
Maybe we could post the links to the training in the show notes, Axel, if it's available in the public domain. Is that possible?
It should be. I will find it for sure. Yeah.
You can. I think that would be absolutely fantastic. There's a question here from Will that I think we should look at. Yeah, quite interesting. I think I know where this question may be coming from.
AI behind changes in markets and consumer behavior. Say the sales pitch example you use, what was good in 2019 may well not be now post-pandemic, different buyers and behaviors. I would imagine it depends on how recent the data is that you feed the machine. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yet, done that exercise, it takes 1 week to feed the AI. Once you have scoped the AI with basic information, that can take a bit of time, the delta of what you want to change, from what we have assessed, takes 1 week to actually come up with new data set. Okay, so after a week of retraining the AI, you get the AI ready to do its assessment of the sales pitch. So the delta, at least for this type of exercise, which is not a totally complex one, because we have a clear scope, it's a 4 or 5 days time elapsed. So, yeah, manageable.
It can be quite quick. Yeah. I think so much of this is going to be down to the governance structure. And one of the things that Lenny talked about in his GST event was the importance of being able to go to the source code that's actually used within the generative engine. And he feels that there's a danger with all the different AI technologies that are now emerging, that it's many of them do not have a source code. So it builds upon its own intelligence systems, if you like, the way it does its algorithms, to form new points of view. And he talked about this concept of drift. You actually drift because of the way the AI algorithms are working. You sort of drift away from the original kind of intention of what the AI source was designed to do. And he believes that unless you are working with vendors in the AI space who knows where the source code is, then the advice is don't use those AI engines. Sounds like what SAP is doing. It does know where the source code is. You've got the data, you're ring fencing it, and you're using that to develop your generative AI kind of outputs, which is really interesting to hear about, Axel. So,
This one, it would be very interesting to invite, Lenny first and some of our developers on AI to have a more technology-centric and governance-centric response to those questions. What I know is that through the ethics group, to avoid that type of problem, we are forced to use a concept, use human in the loop. And the human in the loop means that always, 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 you need to have a human superseding the AI activity and assess the outcome. You can do random sampling, you do whatever you want, but you need to be able at some point to understand how the AI behave. Yeah. And we need to make sure that we have the right level of transparency to tell exactly how the AI has computed what, based on what criteria, and that a human should be able to use that, understand, and by the way, feedback to the AI if the AI went and drifted away. So the human in the loop is what we use at the moment as a way to avoid drifting too much.
Yeah.
Again, in the learning space, it's not too risky. I mean, it's manageable. When you come to sensitive financial data, sales data, and so on, you don't want to drift at all. So you need to have, to go to the core of the code. But usually human in the loop is a way to start, supervising this, right?
But I know we had, again, at our GST event, Axel, we had a colleague of yours, Paul Devlin, talking again on the topic of AI, and he was saying, but humans have bias as well. So exactly. Who defines what's right and wrong? So that's a very philosophical kind of question we could go down, but it's really interesting, this idea of how do you take bias out of a an action or a forecast or whatever it is you're using AI to achieve. Really interesting. Do you think that AI is going to make sales forecasting more predictive now? And do you think that this is going to impact the role of sales managers in any way, that they won't have those ghastly QBR conversations where they're talking about what results are we going to get, because the AI will tell you this is what we're going to get? I mean, what do you think?
You know, I was thinking of Ofer Zilberman and the presentation he made for us on analytics, right, and the accuracy that he could generate through his own model. I do hope that we can have the Ofer Zilberman in the machine through AI for sure, right? Because it's that's what I would expect. And when I talk to my colleagues from Business Objects that we acquired as a company at SAP long time ago, I mean, those guys are doing that, or we're doing that for them. It's the basic of AI, right? So if we are not able to do predictive with AI, with machine learning, then, you know, stop it, because that's exactly what it has been designed to do. The problem is now we talk about the native language of the generative AI that makes it sexy, but the core of machine learning has always been there. So yes, can we do more predictive? For sure. That's what will happen. Now, the level of insight, that's what I'm interested to see. How flexible, how deep can we go just through natural language with that AI to surface new insights? Because again, the AI, when you ask top experts on AI, the AI is not intelligent. AI uses data from the past, doesn't create the new. It surfaces trends, but from old patterns, right? Mm-hmm. So if you want to create the new, use a human, because it's creative and intuitive, right? Otherwise, don't do it. But the point is, and some are very critical about the AI, don't expect too much from an AI. AI looks at past data.
That's very much to Will's point earlier on, isn't it? About looking at history and things change. Okay, sorry, Axel. Yeah, carry on.
No, that's the point. But for me, yes, in terms of forecasting, through pattern recognition, through trends, in the same way Ofer is doing it manually through his experience in operations, the AI should be measuring this in the same way. But again, you need to feed the AI with data. So, okay, we thought that this forecast was accurate. We actually ended here. We didn't end it there. We need to tell that to the AI. We say, guys, by the way, we were in that trajectory. We ended here. That's a data point. Then the AI collects those data points, becomes clever, starts seeing this, and then creates a model around it. So who is going to feed those data to the AI? That's the question.
That's very good. Well, I think we're getting towards the end of the allocated time, Axel. So I just want to kind of ask if there are any sort of last minute questions that any of you have got that you would like to pose of Axel. Very grateful, Axel, for your sharing your current, you know, what project. I don't envy the task. It sounds absolutely massive. I don't know if Andrea or Alexandra or David, Donald, you must have a question, surely, working on velocity of deals and so on. Put them into chat.
Donald, you mentioned PO. Which PO are you referring to? When you perfect pitch to the AI, how long did it take to get a PO? You mean a purchase order request, or which PO are you talking about?
We need to allow maybe Donald to talk in this.
Yeah.
George, can we do that? Where's George?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Yeah, so nice to have you with us, Donald.
Hi, Donald.
Yeah, sorry, I was being very what's the correct word for my question? Yeah, PO is a purchase order, and that was on the previous question as well, related to all the legal framework. I kind of decided that what you really wanted to was to end up with a commercial lawyer. And that's really our challenge, I think, in all of this, is trying to identify where we go and where we can get the benefits, short term, medium term, and long term. And definitely you can see the challenges, but I think what we've got to always be trying is how can we just take it a little bit step forward and learn as we go.
Yes.
And it's been great to hear your input, Axel.
Yeah, Donald, what about your organization? Are you kind of aware of any particular initiatives that the organization is doing around this topic?
I've just come off a seminar where, or a webinar internally, where we've been using the Microsoft Copilot, which is available to everybody in the company. And what's interesting is that 6 months ago, you know, we didn't have this technology, and now we're seeing, well, okay, if I ask a question, how can I use it? What's the benefit of me? And it takes me back to previously when Google was just starting and we started to learn about how we could use Google as a search engine. And what we see now is that asking an AI tool some questions gives us some information, and we've got to think about how can we use that information in the right way. And definitely we're starting to see those things in there, and I'm sure there's many companies are starting to use it in the same way. As just, Where does it take you? Does it take you to that avatar that you described, or does it just help you become that little bit more efficient in your everyday tasks, removing some of the challenges that you have and helping you along the way, giving you some time to think? So I think there's lots of ways that it can be done, and it's still not clear what the right things are that we should be doing, and maybe that's where we should be thinking about it as well. So you've definitely given us some food for thought this morning, Alex. So thank you.
And Donald, just one point which made me smile is the languages. I didn't expect that, but everything is in English. So Phil will be happy. But for me as a French, when you go and you ask the AI to work in a French language, the accuracy drops dramatically. So when what we try to do from an enablement perspective is to train everyone across the world, right? So we need to do it in Korean, Japanese, in Chinese, you know, and so on and so forth. It becomes extremely complex to get an accurate data out of that when you go through this translation. So I'm sure it will improve. But again, just that thing restricts your ability to be inclusive, right?
Yeah.
So that's also a small element, but
it's a major
language for us is a key issue. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think on that note, Axel, I think we have to, first of all, say a huge thank you, you know, for sharing in such an open manner, sort of some of the things you're working on, sort of mind. But I love the idea of how you are approaching AI to take out some of the mundane task related things. You know, pricing information, contracting and everything else. I could see that would have a massive impact on the time that salespeople will have, like you said, to focus on more strategic issues. That was just a little insight that you gave for me, which I found really interesting as well, because I know it's a bane of salespeople's lives often. It's the admin that goes with the job and the difficulty to leverage internal resources in a timely manner to bring presentations together. But I can see it's going to have a massive impact. So on that note, Axel, I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a fantastic session. Hope you've all enjoyed it on the webinar, and we'll see you again in a month's time, where we tend to schedule these once a month. So Axel, it's been a pleasure as always.
Thank you, Phil.
Yeah.
Same here.
Yeah, cheerio.
Thank you everyone. Bye.
Thank you everyone. Bye bye.